Type 2 diabetes is a metabolic condition. The person has high blood sugars in the context of relative lack of insulin from the pancreas and condition called insulin resistance. To explain this further, our pancreas cells, the beta cells in the pancreas, produce a hormone called insulin. And this hormone regulates the amount of sugar in our blood and in the cells of our body after we eat. In type 2 diabetes, the cells in the body become resistant to the effect of insulin, and the passage of sugar in and out of the cells is impeded, leading to higher levels of glucose in the blood than they should be. As a result of this, the pancreas tries to work harder and tries to produce more and more insulin, which for a long time it can do so, but eventually the pancreas itself starts to fail and doesn't produce enough insulin to keep the sugar down. The sugar levels then rise in the blood, and over the passage of time, the patient starts to become symptomatic. At a certain point, when we do the tests, we call this type 2 diabetes. However, the patient may have been developing this for a long period of time before the diagnosis is made. Who is at risk of type 2 diabetes? Type 2 diabetes is strongly associated with being overweight. Anybody with a body mass index of over 24 is classified as being overweight. In particular, if the weight is associated with central body obesity, the risk is higher. And so a more accurate reflection of this is waist circumference, and a high waist circumference for women and men, 35 inches for women and 40 inches for men, is associated with an increased risk of type 2 diabetes. If you have a family history of it, in other words, if a close member of your family has type 2 diabetes, then you have a higher risk. And if more members of your family do, the risk is even higher. Certain ethnic groups have a much higher risk. For example, Southeastern Asians have a risk which can be six times the risk of the average in the UK, whether or not they were born in the UK. The same applies to Black African, Afro-Caribbean, and people from some Middle Eastern backgrounds. The risk can be from three to six times that of the background in the UK population. There is clearly a genetic predisposition to the condition. This is at both individual and population level. Clearly, if you know you have a genetic predisposition to the condition, it is important that you watch out for the other risk factors. Your weight. With increased weight, you have an increased predisposition to diabetes. In addition to this, lifestyle factors such as lack of exercise and poor diet will also contribute to this. Therefore, if you know you have a genetic predisposition to the condition, you should do everything you can to reduce your other risk factors. Type 2 diabetes increases with age. However, sadly, we are seeing the average age of diagnosis reduce so that people are developing it now at a much younger age, and we are even diagnosing it in children. People who suffer from other conditions of insulin resistance, such as polycystic ovary syndrome in women, are at a higher risk of type 2 diabetes, and women who have had gestational diabetes in pregnancy or a large baby with no diagnosis of gestational diabetes are all also at an increased risk and should be screened afterwards. Another risk factor for developing type 2 diabetes can be because you take certain drugs for other conditions. The most common drug which does this is the steroid group of drugs, which some people have to take for chronic underlying diseases. These can affect our body's ability to handle sugar and can precipitate diabetes in susceptible individuals. The other major group of drugs which can lead to a diagnosis of diabetes because it impairs our blood sugar are the antipsychotic drugs which are taken by people with severe mental illness, such as bipolar disease and schizophrenia. These drugs have an effect on the blood and how it metabolizes sugar and also lipids, and can lead these individuals to a predisposition towards diabetes. given that they often have a poor lifestyle for other reasons related to their illness, that puts them at risk of developing major illness as they go through life. In the past, we thought that fat in general was just a store of energy in the body, and that when we needed it, we could call upon it and use it for things like running or to help us when we were hungry. It is now becoming apparent that fat cells, particularly around the stomach, are taking part in a very complex mechanism, releasing inflammatory peptides and hormones which are affecting the body's ability to utilize its glucose properly. People who have central obesity, by that we mean people who have a high waist circumference, seem to be particularly predisposed to diabetes, and this is thought to be due to a condition called insulin resistance. Insulin resistance comes about as a result of the excess fat cells in the core of the body and is a very complex mechanism which is still being much researched and looked into. Metabolic syndrome is a currently quite newly defined syndrome where a number of metabolic factors all come together. This then predisposes an individual to a risk of diabetes. Currently, we diagnose metabolic syndrome when people have three risk factors of the following: a high waist circumference, high blood pressure, poor blood lipids, or impaired glucose tolerance. If an individual has three of these conditions, then they are diagnosed as having metabolic syndrome and should have regular screening tests for diabetes and should look at all the lifestyle modifications they can in order to reduce their risk. In patients with metabolic syndrome, it is important that their risk factors are treated aggressively. In other words, you want to get good blood pressure control, good control of cholesterol and triglycerides and any other predisposing factors. In addition to this, you need to impress on the individual the importance of lifestyle modifications and taking their medication for the underlying conditions. Diabetes can cause many long-term problems. The basic reason for the vast majority of these problems is to do with our vasculature. In other words, our circulation. Diabetes affects both the macrovascular, in other words, our big arteries, as well as the microvascular, which is our tiny arteries. Most people know about some of the macrovascular complications. These are things like heart attacks and strokes, when a major artery in the heart or the brain gets blocked and causes an event. However, vascular problems in diabetes can affect every organ of the body. They can affect our vision by affecting the blood vessels to the eyes and causing hemorrhages and other problems in the back of the eye. They can affect the kidney and lead to kidney failure. They can affect the circulation to our legs and cause problems with our circulation, so we get pains in our legs when we want to walk, and can cause poor circulation to the feet, so we can get ulcers and, in severe cases, even gangrene. Diabetes can cause us to be more susceptible to infections and can make it harder for us to fight infections when we get one. So you see, there are many long-term problems which diabetes can cause, from top to toe. Atherosclerosis, or narrowing of the arteries throughout the body, is the main underlying cause of most of the long-term problems caused by diabetes. This is for complex reasons and is multifactorial. It is not solely due to just the high sugar, but is due to circulating fats like triglycerides and cholesterol in the blood, together with the effect of high blood pressure on the walls of the arteries. Diabetics tend to have all these risk factors, and the more you have, the more likely there will be the development of atherosclerosis, which can affect any of the organs in the body. This is why it is important not just to modify our sugar, but all of our risk factors to protect the vascular system. Another long-term complication of diabetes is peripheral neuropathy. This is when the nerves, particularly in our hands and feet, do not pick up sensations properly and may cause numbness. This in itself can then be a danger because we do not feel when we injure ourselves and can lead to ulcerations and infections. Peripheral neuropathy is not so well related to good diabetic control and can come on regardless of this. We are not clear why this is. Good care of your feet is particularly important for a diabetic. Feet are particularly at risk for a number of reasons. Firstly, because the circulation to the feet is reduced. Secondly, because the nerve supply to the feet cannot be working properly and so the sensation is reduced. These factors lead diabetics to an increased risk of ulceration of the feet. Ulcers are then very difficult to heal because of the poor circulation and can lead to larger ulcers and even in now rare cases of gangrene. In the past, a lot of diabetics had amputations and many people remember diabetic relatives who would have had an amputation and their biggest fear when diagnosed with diabetes is that this will happen to them. The good news is that with better diabetic care over the years and the improvement in the drugs and the way we treat diabetes, this is now a very, very uncommon problem. Kidney problems are also very common in diabetics and often tend to get forgotten. They seem to be on the increase and are probably a combination of vascular disease, both in the large and small arteries, and the effects of risk factors such as high blood pressure and high cholesterol. All these things come together to damage the blood supply to the kidney, which then works less well to filter the bad chemicals out of our body. The good news is that kidney problems in diabetics can be picked up very early, long before they cause other problems, and there are simple tests on the urine which should be done regularly, which can pick up a kidney which is starting to fail early. Once this is done, there are medications which can be given to help the kidney and reduce the chance of further reduction in its function. Good major studies have shown that good control of our blood pressure, our cholesterol, and our blood glucose can reduce the long-term problems that diabetes causes, and this is the main reason why diabetics must have regular monitoring and take the medication suggested. Type 2 diabetes is a complicated diagnosis, and we need to know more about it. Having said and mentioned earlier all the risk factors for diabetes and talked a lot about central obesity, we still find people diagnosed with type 2 diabetes who are not either overweight and do not have central obesity. True, they may have other risk factors, usually family history and ethnicity, but clearly they do not have others. There is a lot of other etiology we still need to know about and a lot more research that needs to be done to look into these things. It is a disease with a wide spectrum of illness now affecting a huge number of people and a lot more needs to be known about it. Last week, I diagnosed one of my patients with type 2 diabetes. She was not overweight. She had a normal blood pressure. She is an athlete and runs regularly and has a good diet. Her blood test clearly showed she had type 2 diabetes and not type 1. She did, however, have a family history and is from an Asian background. Clearly these were her risk factors, but she had absolutely none of the other risk factors that we mentioned earlier. Last year, I diagnosed a man and wife who, again, were not overweight, but were of Asian origin, although third generation, and were born in the UK. Neither of them were overweight. They were both active and have a very healthy vegan diet. Within 3 months, we diagnosed them both as having diabetes, and they both had a strong family history and this particular ethnicity. Clearly, the genetic factor in this group is extremely strong, regardless of weight or central obesity. As the incidence and prevalence of diabetes in the population has increased over the last decade, we are focusing much more both on picking up type 2 diabetics early in their diagnosis, but also focusing on people who are more susceptible to diabetes and who may become diabetic in the future. As a result of this, we now try hard to identify a group of individuals we diagnose as having pre-diabetes. In the past, we did this and looked for patients who, when they had a fasting glucose, were not in the diabetic range but were above the normal range. We diagnosed these people as having impaired glucose tolerance and kept an eye on them and gave them advice and repeated their tests. The criteria of the World Health Organization has now changed and tightened up, and we are working hard to identify a group of people by measuring a test which we used to call the HbA1c and now call IFCC. This test is very good as it gives us the average of a person's blood sugar over the last 2 to 3 months. We are using it increasingly as a screening tool, and patients with a reading of 42 to 47 are labelled as having pre-diabetes so that we can advise them and provide some intervention. We have started programmes such as moving away from diabetic programmes in the hope of either slowing their progress to type 2 diabetes or perhaps even stopping them developing it at all. Where I work, individuals who are diagnosed as being in the pre-diabetic group are offered referral to a program we call Moving Away from Diabetes. On this program, they attend, together with their partners if they wish, a series of classes, groups and workshops. These include talks from dietitians, from physiotherapists, from diabetic nurses, in order to talk about and look at their lifestyle. They have some one-to-one intervention and they have advice on diet and exercise programs. They are able to attend Swimming World classes and they are able to attend a regular exercise program run by one of our physiotherapists. At the end of the three-month course, all their parameters, weight, blood pressure and blood sugar are measured again so they can chart their improvement. Patients find this input really very helpful, and many, many of my patients have done extremely well on it. Some patients have been able to move their blood test back into the normal range, so they are not even in the pre-diabetic range anymore. Clearly, this is great news, although it is early days, and it will be great to see what happens over the next years.